Right now, it's our weekly look at the top state news from last week.
Today, in a federal appeals court in Chicago, Wisconsin's controversial voter ID law is getting a hearing, along with other election-related laws. A panel of three federal judges will hear arguments from both sides to determine whether or not to bring back restrictions on early voting and how to deal with people who have trouble getting IDs.
Laurel White has been covering this story, and she joins us now to share the details of this and other top news from the past week. She's Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter. Laurel, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us, what is this appeals court in Chicago looking at?
Well, the appeals court in Chicago is hearing two different Wisconsin election law cases, or they heard them this morning, rather. So one is Frank v. Walker. That's a five-year-old case that's obviously been around for a while. It's gone through several appeals. And then the One Wisconsin Institute versus Thompson case, which is younger. I believe that one kicked off in 2015. So these looked at a variety of issues from election-related laws like early voting to Wisconsin's voter ID law.
And particularly, what do we know about the direction the court seems to be leaning based on what we've heard so far?
Well, you know, this was a three-judge panel, so it wasn't the entire Seventh Circuit, as you mentioned before. It might be pertinent to mention that all three of these judges were appointed by Republican presidents. And some of the comments that they made today were pretty critical, particularly in that One Wisconsin Institute versus Thompson case. And that's the case that's looking at more than a dozen of Wisconsin's election laws. And a verdict came down from a district court last summer. And kind of the biggest thing that that district court verdict did was to knock down some restrictions that had been put in place on early voting. So, for example, the number of locations or hours that local governments could offer people to go and vote before Election Day. Those restrictions have been put in place since 2011. The court said those aren't appropriate. And what we heard from, you know, really all of the judges today on the appellate court was that they didn't find that ruling very compelling. They didn't really think that it held up. Their questioning was pretty harsh. So we don't know officially, of course, what their ruling is going to be for another few weeks or maybe even a few months. But it seems like they're leaning toward, anyway, reversing that district court opinion.
And what would be the next step as Wisconsin's voter ID law makes its way through the court? What happens for the side that loses?
Sure. So whichever side loses this appeal, they can take it to the next level. These things continue. They've been going on for quite a while, and we expect them to keep going. They can try to appeal to the full appellate court, so all of the judges rather than just the three-judge panel, or they could appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Now, it sounds like whatever happens, it would not affect the election in Wisconsin coming up in April, but it sounds like it could have the potential to impact some bigger races a year out.
That's right. Yeah, courts are really hesitant to rule too close to an election. So I think folks would be really surprised if a verdict came down before April that would make any changes. I think it's probably going to be after that and, like you said, affect elections a little further down the line.
Now, on Wednesday, President Trump's administration rolled back guidance from the Obama administration that was directing schools to let students decide which bathroom to use based on gender identity as opposed to biological gender or sex. What kind of reaction do you see to that in Wisconsin?
So I spoke with advocates and school officials and government officials yesterday about the Trump administration's action. And pretty much across the board, all of these folks said that schools need to continue to do what they can to provide safe and supportive and inclusive environments for students, and that includes transgender students.
And you spoke with someone from GSAVE, which is a transgender advocacy group, and here's what he had to say.
The sky hasn't fallen. The educators are very good at figuring out how to maintain the dignity, respect, and safety of all students.
And Laurel, what did we hear there?
Yeah, so that was Brian Jukums. He's the education and policy director for GSAFE, and he goes into a lot of schools and helps them kind of craft and work their way through these transgender bathroom policies, providing support and guidance. And as you heard there, he doesn't expect the Trump administration's action to have too much of an effect on schools that already have policies in place. And he actually said to me as well that he's working with some districts that are crafting policies right now, and he doesn't expect them to step anything back or to abandon that work.
What did you hear about whether or not, you know, aside from the legal aspects, that this could change the atmosphere, the way students felt in their own schools?
So I spoke with the superintendent of a school that's in the Fox Cities region of the state, and he said that they're not planning to change their policy. The policy's been in place for a couple years, but he said he did expect it to be kind of an uncomfortable time for some of his students, some of the families in the district, just because there's a national conversation about this now, and it's kind of drawing attention and possibly criticism. Students might not feel as supported. I spoke to a school board member from a school board that's in the Milwaukee suburbs, and she really echoed those sentiments. She said that students might have a hard time for a little bit now, maybe focusing on their schoolwork as something that's so personal and so sensitive has kind of been brought into the light.
We're looking back at the big news from the past week in Wisconsin right now with Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, and we'll pick up with her in just a bit.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're picking up our discussion now with State Capitol reporter Laurel White talking about the big news from the past week here in Wisconsin. And Laurel, veterans called on Governor Scott Walker and Republican lawmakers on Wednesday to leave their plans to repeal prevailing wage laws for state projects in Wisconsin. What did the veterans have to say about why they wanted that?
Well, veterans are saying that they would be adversely affected by the repeal of this law. Veterans, you may or may not know, according to the American Legion of Wisconsin, for example, work disproportionately in construction, more than other folks. So they return from service and they often pursue construction jobs. So they say that the repeal of the prevailing wage law for state construction projects would really adversely affect them.
And here's a clip from one veteran who spoke at the hearing.
When we come back from our tour duty and combat, we don't want to fight here no more.
And Laurel, tell us more about that hearing and what we just heard.
So that was Leroy Miller. He's an Army veteran who works in construction now. He was one of more than a dozen veterans that were present at this press conference in the Capitol. I believe that was Wednesday. And there were several other representatives from organizations. I think I mentioned the American Legion of Wisconsin. A department commander for the American Legion during the press conference said, why is it that always the budget is balanced on the backs of veterans? So pretty strong language during this press conference. There were some other American Legion officials there who expressed some optimism. They said that the governor has traditionally been, you know, quote, on the side of veterans. So they're optimistic that now that they've voiced a strong opinion about this pending legislation, that the governor will withdraw his support and kind of change course on this.
So we'll watch that as it continues to evolve. And in another story, Laurel, on Tuesday, lawmakers held a hearing on the Transportation Department audit that came out last month. And what came out didn't cast the DOT in the best light.
It didn't. And this was a really highly anticipated audit. Lawmakers had been waiting for months to hear what the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau had to say about the State Department of Transportation. Just really quickly, a summary of that audit for folks who might not be familiar. The biggest takeaway was that it found the DOT has been underestimating the cost of projects, primarily because they haven't been factoring in inflation into their project cost estimates. It also highlighted some things like the DOT failing to meet its own performance metrics and, you know, kind of continued to talk about something that we've heard a lot in recent years is that road conditions across the state are deteriorating.
And here's a bit from new State Department of Transportation Secretary Dave Ross.
We need to change the culture at DOT. We need to become more performance driven. We need to become more accurate.
And Secretary Ross there looking at some future, hopefully, behaviors, he says, for the DOT. But there were also some specific recommendations made. Tell us about those, Laurel.
Yeah, so Secretary Ross is really, he's new to this position. He just took over for former Secretary Mark Gottlieb last month in early January. And so he was kind of in a unique position to start fresh and say, we're going to take these recommendations that are in the report. Those recommendations are really wide ranging. So they go from sort of recommendations on project management, on how the DOT takes in bids for contracts, how they monitor projects as they're going along, kind of things like that. And then also legislative recommendations. So basically bills that the legislature could pass to put new practices in place at the DOT that are mandated by law.
And Laurel, we've got a new budget in play. It is not set in stone. What sort of effect could this audit have on the DOT's ask this year?
Well, that was a really prominent part of this hearing that was held this week on this DOT audit. There were several lawmakers on this committee, and they weighed in with different opinions on what this audit might mean for the budget. Representative John Nygren, who's a chair of the Budget Writing Committee, so a very powerful lawmaker and has a lot of power over the state budget, he said that, you know, the DOT underestimating project costs might mean that they need even more money than they've asked for. There's been a projected shortfall of about $1 billion for the state transportation department. And Representative Nygren said, well, maybe that projection of $1 billion shortfall is too small. Maybe the shortfall is even bigger. On the other side of that, Senator Chris Kapinga from Delafield said, the DOT hasn't been handling its money well. It hasn't been estimating project costs correctly. They're not prioritizing projects properly. Going and giving them more money at this point, in Kapinga's exact words, he said would be the absolute wrong thing to do. So two very different sides of the debate on what this audit might mean for DOT.
Laurel, thanks a lot for joining us and getting us up to date.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That was Laurel White, WPR State Capitol reporter, with us there to round up the top state news stories for the past week here in Wisconsin.
Coming up after the news, a look back at the career and legacy of a Wisconsin musical legend, the original funky drummer, Clyde Stubblefield.
Right now, don't forget, Wisconsin Public Radio's winter membership drive is going on. You can make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.